Studio 360.
Colonel Thursday, I gave my word to Cochise. No man is going to make a liar out of me, sir.
That's John Wayne, of course, in one of the many westerns he made with the director John Ford.
There's no question of honor, sir, between an American officer and Cochise.
There is to me, sir.
Together, Ford and John Wayne, you kind of have to say his whole name, made more than a dozen films and created this archetypal persona. Much more than just a movie cowboy, John Wayne came to represent an idea of American masculinity, an ideal to which lots of men aspired. But as really masterful as many of Ford's John Wayne westerns are, 60 and 70 and 80 years later, there are also troubling aspects to some. So, what should we here in the 21st century make of them? Which brings us to the latest installment in our American Icon series. It's about one of the best of those John Ford movies starring John Wayne, which shows both men at the height of their powers and at their most problematic. Here is producer Arun Venugopal.
I suspect, among the last generation of American children to play cowboys and Indians. I was an Indian kid growing up in Texas, but the other kind of Indian, we'd say almost apologetically. My dad, the Indian immigrant, watched westerns on TV. He was a fan of the show Bonanza. But I never got it. In the 1970s, even kids like me, who played with fake tomahawks and wore feather headdresses without the slightest inhibition, didn't watch westerns. Their heyday had come and gone. In fact, I don't think I watched a single western until I was well into adulthood, in the late 90s. The film was John Ford's magnum opus, The Searchers, from 1956. And I've been thinking about it and fretting over it ever since.
So The Searchers is considered the kind of the greatest of the golden era of Hollywood westerns.
In 1959, Jean-Luc Godard, you know, the famous New Wave French director in Cahiers du Cinéma, wrote about it in glowing terms and compared it to Homer's The Odyssey.
It's widely regarded as one of the most magnificent Hollywood movies, and indeed movies of any kind or country of origin ever made.
In 2008, the American Film Institute named The Searchers the greatest Western. Entertainment Weekly said the same thing. On Rotten Tomatoes, it gets a 100% rating with critics. Stephen Metcalf is the host of Slate's Culture Gabfest podcast, and its critic at large.
It's been a well of creative inspiration that great filmmakers have gone back to over and over and over again.
Filmmakers like Steven Spielberg.
I try to run a John Ford film, one or two, before I start every movie. I have to look at The Searchers, have to, almost every time.
Star Wars owes a huge debt to The Searchers.
It's a little short for a stormtrooper.
Huh? Oh, the uniform.
I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here to rescue you.
The Searchers was directed by John Ford and came out in 1956. It begins with one of the most memorable opening shots in film history, in which the pitch-black screen gives way to a frame within a frame. From the interior of a home, we see the darkened silhouette of a woman standing within a doorway, looking out, away from us. Nancy Schoenberger is the author of Wayne and Ford, The Films, The Friendship, and The Forging of an American Hero.
And what's on the other side of that door is this vast landscape.
Filled with mesas, rising up in the brilliant light of the desert.
And you see a figure riding in from the vast landscape.
Ethan?
It gives you the sense that we are really watching something mythic here with these fantastic mesas and buttes.
That's your Uncle Ethan!
This is Texas, 1868. The man is Ethan Edwards, played by John Wayne. He's a hulking, mysterious figure who's returned to his brother's homestead after years away. He wears gray, Confederate gray, and he carries money, ill-gotten gains. But for a moment at least, we enjoy the reunion. Ethan with his brother and his sister-in-law, Martha, who is clearly in love with Ethan. And of course, the kids. In the eyes of the director, John Ford, no matter what life on the frontier is like outside, inside, there's a simple, sentimental beauty, marked by warmth and laughter.
Ah! Ah!
But a of course, the serenity doesn't last for long. Ethan and the others go out to investigate a cattle theft before realizing it's all just a ruse.
Stealing the cattle was just to pull us out. This is a murder raid.
The men rush back home, but by the time they arrive, it's too late. Everything's on fire. Martha, Ethan's beloved sister-in-law, has been raped by the Comanche, and she's dead. As is her husband Aaron, Ethan's brother, and their son Ben. But the two daughters, Lucy and young Debbie, are missing. They've been abducted by a sinister Comanche chief known as Scar.
Just one reason we're here, ain't it? That's to find Debbie and Lucy.
If they're still alive.
And as the following scenes unfold, we understand how the film gets its name. Ethan and his adopted nephew, Martin, set out on a quest, a search, that will last years. Will they manage to find Lucy or Debbie? And what will happen if they do? It's a stark narrative, but Ford rarely spoke of his work in grand philosophical terms. To him, movies were entertainment. In The Searchers, you get slapstick fight scenes, riveting cowboy and Indian battles, broad racial caricatures, and dance sequences. Years after making The Searchers, John Ford was interviewed by a French journalist.
Well, the Western is the best type of picture. It's action, but you have horses moving, you have movement, you have background, scenery, color, and that's why they're interesting. And I think most of our best pictures are Western.
But one of many reasons why the film resonated to the extent it did, at least with critics, is because of the single-minded, Ahab-like intensity of Ethan's quest.
Do you think maybe there's a chance we still might find her?
Engine will chase a thing till he thinks he's chased it enough. Then he quits. Same way when he runs. Seems like he never learns there's such a thing as a critter will just keep coming on. So we'll find him in the end. Just as sure as the turning of the earth.
More than anything else, one could argue The Searchers is about sex, which is to say, the fear of it. Early in their quest, Ethan and Martin discover that the older of the two sisters is dead. That leaves just one, Debbie, played by Natalie Wood, who's out there, somewhere.
She's alive, she's safe. For a while, they'll keep her to raise as one of their own until she's of an age to...
What John Wayne alluded to just briefly in that little speech at the beginning is the fact that over time she will grow and come of age, which means she will become a woman and become the wife of a Comanche.
Glenn Frankel is the author of The Searchers, The Making of an American Legend, and spoke to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
She will have sex with Indians, and this sort of psychosexual element to the story is what drives it forward, because as time goes on, the uncle makes the decision that he's not going to try to rescue her to restore her to the family, but he's actually thinking of killing her because she's been violated, she's crossed that line, she's suffered a fate worse than death.
And this is the twist that defines The Searchers. The character of Ethan Edwards, as played by John Wayne, has no intention of saving his niece. He's more interested in saving whiteness by killing her. Ford never tries to sugarcoat Ethan's character. And as director Martin Scorsese explains it in an interview with the American Film Institute, we're often reminded of Ethan's brutality.
You really get his character in the moment when they unearth a grave of a dead Indian. And there's some disagreement they're discussing, they're arguing, and suddenly Ethan Edwards says, "Let's finish the job, do it right."
"Why don't you finish the job?"
Twirls out his gun and fires twice, shooting out the eyes of the dead Indian.
"What good did that do you?"
"By what you preach, none. But what that Comanche believes, ain't got no eyes, he can't enter the spirit land. Has to wander forever between the winds."
So in a sense, what he's doing, he hates so much that he hates beyond the grave, that he doesn't want to give him the peace of his paradise. You know, he wants to kill the soul of these people.
Ethan's hatred of the Comanche is something so great that it worries even his own family.
"He'll find her now, Martin. Honest, he will."
"That's what I'm afraid of, Laurie. Him finding her. Oh, I've seen his eyes at the very word Comanche. I've seen him take his knife and..."
That's Martin, who Ethan had found as a baby, orphaned, and who is raised by Ethan's brother and family. But years later, Ethan only has contempt for him.
Well, I could mistake you for a half-breed.
Not quite. I'm 8th Cherokee, and the rest is Welsh and English.
The racism takes different shapes. Sometimes it's explicit and violent, and sometimes it's meant to be funny. During their travels, Ethan and Martin are briefly joined by a third character, a heavyset Native American woman. Somehow, in a comic turn, she's been won by Martin.
You didn't buy any blanket. You bought her. You got yourself a wife, sonny.
She's his accidental bride. And although she doesn't speak his language and he doesn't speak hers, she is clearly smitten. Martin finds this absolutely infuriating. And when she tries to snuggle up next to him at night, he jumps up and kicks her down a hill.
You know that's grounds for divorce in Texas.
The scene is played for laughs. The first time I saw The Searchers, this was the one thing that stayed with me. I was so troubled by it. John Ford was even asked about this years later.
Why are they beaten by men? Why are they being punished?
Who?
Women.
Where?
In your pictures.
Oh, the audiences like it.
He was a showman above all else. But for Martin Scorsese and other fans of the film, The Searchers was a window onto life. Not just life on the frontier, but contemporary American society.
He just literally acts out the racism, the worst aspects of racism of our country. And he just shows us the worst part of ourselves that's coming out of the late 40s, early 50s. He just brings it right up to the surface, so we have to deal with it.
I watched it over and over and over again, because I've probably seen this film 50 times, man. I can probably articulate every scene in this movie.
Sam Pollard is a documentary filmmaker who teaches at NYU.
After watching it for so many years, I see how complicated it is in terms of issues of race, in terms of issues of masculinity and gender. That John Ford, in his character of Ethan, basically paints a very complicated brush of a man who's a misogynist and a racist, you know. John Ford knew what he was doing.
Pollard and I watched the scene together. This is the moment when Ethan and his traveling companion of many years, Martin, finally encounter Debbie in the desert. She's dressed in Native American clothes. It's kind of a blast to watch movies with Sam Pollard, even ones he's seen 50 times.
It's your brother Martin.
Debbie.
I come to take you home.
Debbie, don't you remember? I'm Martin.
Don't you remember me, Debbie?
I'm always.
And she says, Martin, I waited for you. I prayed for you to come, Martin. I love this movie.
Didn't come.
And then, just as Martin is reconnecting with his long-lost sister, the one he spent years of his life searching for, Ethan draws his gun and aims it right at her.
Stand aside, Martin.
He's bent on an honor killing.
Nancy Schoenberger.
And it's really terrifying to see the depth and the passion of his hatred and his hatred of the Comanches.
Schoenberger says she asked filmmaker and John Ford obsessive Peter Bogdanovich a central question about the character of Ethan.
Well, why do we even care about him when he is so frightening a figure? And his response was, because it's John Wayne. You can't not like John Wayne. He brought the goodwill of his earlier movies. And of course, I don't want to do a spoiler alert here, but I will. The very end of the movie, he does redeem himself.
And this is how. After their initial close encounter with Debbie, Martin and Ethan are chased off by Comanche warriors connected to the evil Chief Scar. But they eventually return, and with the cavalry close by, descend upon a Comanche village. Ethan rides in and finds his nemesis, Chief Scar, inside a teepee. He's already dead, presumably from a stray bullet, but that doesn't stop Ethan from scalping his corpse. Then, on horseback, he bears down on Debbie. She runs in terror from him, and in vain.
No, Ethan! No!
But at the moment when Ethan is expected to finally kill her, he relents.
Let's go home, Debbie.
Instead of murdering Debbie and maintaining his idea of racial purity, he holds her in his arms, high up in the air. And then they go home. I can see why The Searchers was canonized, because it documented the unmitigated hatred of this one white man during an era, the 1950s, when the dominant culture was so white and so patriarchal. But more importantly, because it suggested that even the worst, most racist white guy can be saved. that he is deep down a good guy. Having experienced a change of heart, he simply leaves the homestead behind one last time and walks off into the sunset.
So, you know, the standard line about the Western is that the actual Western frontier of the United States closed right around 1890. And the idea that, you know, our Westering spirit, that the restless would always be able to go further west and start anew, was done with. And it's at exactly that moment that the Western dime novel becomes a popular genre. And out of those dime novels comes the cowboy operas or, you know, horse operas of the B picture. And out of those comes Ford and Wayne. And the idea is that this is a highly mythic, highly nostalgic idea of America and an America that's been lost, against which masculinity tests itself by rescuing wilderness from the savages.
Meaning, of course, from Native Americans. You might think the idea of the savage Indian had been around forever, or at least since the time of first contact with Europeans. But in the movies, it only developed during the 1930s, according to the documentary Real Injun. This was when the country, meaning white America, was looking for a new kind of hero, and John Ford and John Wayne were instrumental in that process, with the first film they collaborated on.
Stagecoach is the iconic Western. It's the Western that all others were really modeled after, and it's one of the most damaging movies for Native people in history.
Ojibwe film critic Jesse Winty.
You have white society inside the stagecoach, and they are besieged on all sides by Native people, by the wild of America. Those that are stopping progress, those that are backwards, those that are vicious and bloodthirsty. Stagecoach summed up and gave the opinion of Native people for decades to the populace in the U.S. That's how they thought of us, and it's because of John Ford that they thought of us like that.
The Searchers, released 17 years after Stagecoach, is often positioned as the right kind of Western because it concedes that white people can be savage in their own right. But here's the thing. Ethan's character is granted agency. He makes choices. For whatever reason, he chooses not to kill Debbie. That same agency isn't extended to his Comanche enemy, Scar, who's killed off-screen. Scar was played by Henry Brandon, born Heinrich von Kleinbach, a white guy in brown face or red face.
I took my wife to see this movie at the public theater years ago.
Sam Pollard.
And all she could say was, "This is the most racist movie I've ever seen. I don't know how you could watch this film." And I told her, "You're absolutely right."
I grew up in the West, and I look at the Western, and I know that it's probably the best propaganda movie ever made, meaning it allows us to root for the manifest destiny of the settlers or the colonizers and to defeat Native people.
Chris Ayer is Southern Cheyenne and Arapaho and the director of the film Smoke Signals.
The only thing more damaging to Native people over the past 120 years than the Bible was cinema. That has been the lot of Native people in movies, which is romantic that Native people die so that the real people, the settlers, can actually prosper.
It's not just the Native characters in The Searchers. We're left to wonder about Debbie, too, who was captured by the Comanche at a young age, then returned to white civilization. How does she feel about that? The film doesn't ask.
He wants to kill her for surviving. For the language she spits.
But Tracy K. Smith does. She's the U.S. Poet Laureate, and years ago, she wrote a poem simply called The Searchers. It's written from Debbie's perspective.
The way she runs, clutching her skirt, as if life pools there. Instead, he grabs her, puts her on his saddle, rides back into town, where faces she barely remembers smile into her fear. With questions, and the wish, the impossible wish, to forget. What does living do to any of us?
Tracy K. Smith thinks the film still serves a purpose, but with a big fat asterisk. When it's screened, movie theaters should follow it with community discussions, like some theaters do with another racially problematic movie, Gone with the Wind.
It definitely requires a talk back session. I think it's a film that we need to talk about We can't just take everything at face value. You know, I think it touches on too much that still hurts and on too much that affirms perspectives that are willfully blind to the realities of contemporary Native American life.
Stephen Metcalf isn't so generous. Like me, he thinks that the movies and the Western's fixation with great white men means that The Searchers is no longer relevant.
What people struggling on behalf of women's rights, gay rights, and the rights of people of color need right now aren't for the white heroes to step in and be white heroes again. And if we're going to give enormous amounts of credit to movies that were exploitative of such people by saying, well, they're actually winking at us, or they actually have a layer of ambivalence or ambiguity to them, you're leaving intact white men as the heroes who are going to rescue us. I don't think we need to be rescued by John Wayne.
Arun Venugopal of WNYC produced our story. He's the creator of WNYC's Micropolis series on race and identity. Special thanks to Lauren Francis for production assistance and to Wayne Schulmeister, who engineered the segment. This and other American Icon stories are funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities.